Release him. No hard feelings. It's just business. Take it from an ex-bounty hunter. Don't work for Skugholes. It's not worth it.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Eric.
This is House Podcastica, the Book of Boba Fett edition.
This week we are covering the Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Episode 3, The Streets of Mos Espa.
It sounds like a Bruce Springsteen song or something.
Why not?
I guess we were wrong that the Tusken Raiders are going to play a part going forward.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know why I thought to say that first. But we're going to start off with our Star Wars question of the week. Eric came up with a few good ones, so we're going to start with one of his, which is, if you could choose any ship in the Star Wars universe to own, which one would it be and why?
Eric,
who's
you
going
go.
With me? I'll go first. Okay. I chose the Ghost from Star Wars Rebels.
Cool.
And I thought about, like, you know, of course I thought about the X-Wing and the Falcon and all that. And I even thought, if I chose a Star Destroyer, would I also get TIE Fighters?
Right.
Like, along with that?
Good question.
I was thinking that, and I thought, no, it'd have to be totally stripped
just
down.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I chose the Ghost because, you know, not only could I drive all my friends around, but it has that little pod thing that's connected to the top of it, the Phantom.
Mm-hmm. That can like a shuttle.
It's a little fighter thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But thought that was cool. So there you go.
Cool.
Not bad. There are so many cool ships in the Star Wars universe. So many to choose from. Obviously, the Millennium Falcon is super cool. X-Wings are cool. All the Rebel ships are fun, you know, but I've always, the Slave One, of course, is cool. If you'd asked me when I was a kid, I probably would have said Slave One. I love the Razor Crest.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, exactly. I've always had a soft spot for the Imperial Shuttle. I just like the shape and the way the wings fold up and down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't really see it, but I have a Lego one on a shelf up over here. And it's so cool. So I would go Imperial Shuttle and just zip around in that sucker.
I'm going to pick the Death Star so I can destroy my enemies.
Oh, Death Star. I didn't even think of that.
I don't even know if that is a ship. No, I was thinking about this and I'm like, because it's like if you could own one, and I'm like, you kind of have to ignore the practical implications, like, how would you fuel it and maintain
where
it?
Park
would you know how to fly it? Where would you park it? But aside from all that, yeah, the Slave One came to mind. I think that's my favorite, how it looks. And we saw in The Mandalorian that it actually has more room in there than you might think.
Right.
But the B-Wing and the X-Wing fighters I also am really fond of. But I'd probably go with the Millennium Falcon because it's comfortable. Same reasoning for you with the Ghost, that you could bring your friends around and be more comfortable.
Play chess.
Yeah. And it's all souped up with his, you know, modifications and everything.
Yeah. I came pretty close to choosing the Millennium Falcon because it's so classic, and you're right. It's big enough for enough people. There's areas to hang out in,
have a party,
whatever. It's, it's a pretty awesome ship, but there's so many good ones. I love all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no wrong answer. I mean, I feel like I have been on the Millennium Falcon because I went to Disneyland.
Me too.
That ride.
I haven't done it yet.
Oh, no way, dude. Yeah,
I know.
It was so fun. I was in the one in Florida, and I was there before they opened the Imperial side of it, or the First Order side of it, because there's another ride, another ship.
Rise of the Resistance.
On. That's the one, yeah. But the Millennium Falcon was so fun. Rode it twice.
It's worth going back to do the Rise of the Resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because the Millennium Falcon I enjoyed, but it made me sick.
Oh, really?
I mean, not really, really, but it did make you feel kind of queasy. But the Rise of the Resistance was just incredible. I mean, it was all really awesome.
Yeah, I want to do it. Someday I'll travel again, and we're going to go do that.
Right. We'll get through this, Spike. in a little while here. You can probably hear that I'm COVID addicted right now, by the way, as is my whole family, but we're all doing fine.
Good. Good. I'm glad no one's suffering. That sucks.
Yeah. And I'm vaccinated and boosted. So maybe I would be dead right now if I wasn't, but I'm okay.
Well, on that note.
On that light note. Let's move on to the Book of Boba Fett Season 1, Episode 3, The Streets of Mos Espa. What did you guys think of this one, Eric?
I liked it, but I had some, little issues here and there. I mean, I think these episodes would really have to take a turn for me not to like it. I mean, I had some issues with a few scenes here and there, but overall, seeing the world and seeing all these characters do their thing makes me happy. So overall, I liked it with a few problems here and there.
Mm-hmm. I sort of feel like, I liked this one more than last week on last week's episode on One Watch, but I know what you mean about how I just kind of like them all anyways. Yeah, like I've had that with The Mandalorian too. This show would have to be really bad for me. Not to get a lot of enjoyment out of it. If you go back to our podcast about Ash versus Evil Dead, Jason, there's no way I would dislike one of those episodes. It's just the show is built to be loved, right?
Some were great and the other ones were super great.
Exactly. And I feel like this show is sort of like that too, but I'm with you, Eric, a few little things here and there, but overall I liked it. And one of the reasons I liked it a little bit more than last week is because this one took place more in the sort of in the Tusken timeline or whatever. And I appreciated that. So I was overall pretty happy with this one.
Yeah, I did enjoy because I feel like this show, I've always said Mandalorian and Boba Fett are more of a show of moments where it's just cool. You get a cool vibe from the coolness of what you're watching. And this show was more about getting to know the lay of the land and the plot and the power players and all that, which I enjoyed. But I don't know, maybe it's because I felt shitty from having COVID. It was part of it. But I feel like this is probably my least favorite episode of anything from The Mandalorian or Boba Fett.
Whoa.
Which, like, as you said, Chris, I mean, it's a high bar with these shows. So I did enjoy it. But it wasn't, like, the things that stood out really stood out. And the pacing was weird. And there were a lot of things that I felt undercut the story. So I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I thought maybe I would like it more on my second watch, and I did like it a little more, but still, I would say issues. It's my least favorite of all of them. Yeah.
Well, let's get into it. I'm curious about what some of your issues are.
Mm-hmm. I bet you they're the same.
The same ones. Yeah. The Vespas.
Yep.
Okay, Eric, what's your first one?
My first favorite moment was, Black Kirstan, or however you pronounce his name, the Wookiee ripping him out of the back to tank.
I think
awesome.
Fennec Shand said Kersantan.
Kersantan.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think that was right. But that whole fight sequence, I was shocked to see him get ripped out of the back to tank, and then the whole fight, and it was kind of cool to see his team kind of jumping in there and helping him out. But as cool as that was, I had a little problem with it, because I think from seeing him, from the last episode, I wanted this like big showdown between him and Boba Fett and all of his armor and them both just going at it, and didn't quite get that. So that was one of my little issues, even though it was like one of my favorite moments.
It is funny that they decided to do it where Boba Fett was pulled out of the back to tank, basically naked, right? And has to fight this guy. I mean, my first thought was, well, how did the Wookiee get into the place? Like, does no one, he just walked into his like private inner bedroom.
Boba Fett needs some employees.
He does. And that was actually another one of the things I noticed. It's like, who's he got? He's got this gang of like misfit teenagers.
How does he get any
now.
Respect without
a
clan or whatever?
Right.
Totally. But like, so how did the Wookiee get in there? And then to stage the fight in there, I thought it was a really cool fight, and it really put Boba Fett at a disadvantage, being like wet and naked and like with
and
no weapons.
Taken by surprise, totally.
Right. Totally ripped out of bed, right?
Yeah.
I did appreciate sort of the not, it's not imagery is not the right word, but the idea that he's kind of being, he was in his dream, right? And he's ripped right. back into the present from the past kind of. Yeah, and
that was cool.
I wanted that because I'm like, I want more in the current time. Like, you know? Right. I'm done with that. So.
You identified with the Wookiee.
A little bit. I mean, it was a representation of what I wanted the show to do, which I was okay with, but the fight was cool.
I can picture you just like knock, knock, knock. Hey, can you get out of there and deal with the stuff in the present day, please?
We got stuff to do here, you know?
Right. I did think it was kind of funny that, you know, not after the fight, but, you know, he takes out those Grimorian guards and they get him into the Sarlacc pit and he comes running down with his robe. So that meant that he took the time to like run over during this big drop down fight where all these, you know, people were potentially getting killed and oh, I got to get my robe on real quick. Let me tie that up, run down and see what's going on.
Well, I mean, he's not going to come down in his little space shorts, so he needs right. a robe.
Right.
Yeah, I was a little worried though because he really got his ass kicked, and in the towards the end there, when the Wookiee's sort of bear hugging him, kind of, you hear ribs cracking and bones breaking.
Like, is he crushing his spine or?
Well, he looked like he went all limp and unconscious, and then he just throws him down, and I thought, oh my God, Boba Fett's in real trouble here.
Too.
He had a weird toe.
His toe? Yeah. If you watch it again, his big toe is sticking like straight up.
Oh, that's a bad sign too. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought he was really, really badly hurt. And then you're right. He just walks down in a robe like everything's fine.
He's like, doo-doo.
Yeah. Which I don't like. I mean, in superhero movies, you go, okay, they're kind of invulnerable, but because they're slamming each other all around, but it takes away from the stakes of it when you can take a guy and throw him against the wall, crush him, bite his hand, and he's fine. Right. But you don't feel like there's any stakes, you know?
Well, he didn't even bleed from the bite, right? His hand wasn't even injured. You know, if a Wookiee bites your hand, it's probably coming off, I think.
Yeah, you know? I mean, bite some fingers off.
Ripping arms and legs off.
Yeah. Right. So
Disney-fied.
Yep. Disney-fied. Mm-hmm. So as much as I loved, I mean, I liked the fight, and I thought it was fun seeing the rest of the team chip in a little bit, even though we don't know anything about them yet, but it was kind of cool.
It was cool to see that it took all of them to subdue him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
His electric brass knuckles were cool. I mean, I liked that he pulled him out of the back to tank because we've seen Boba Fett wake up from the back to tank a couple of times already. So that was really unexpected. You know,
he
was just kind of waiting for like Fennec Shand to say, hey, someone's here or whatever. All of a sudden, it's like, rawr!
Yeah.
And the way he was in the center of the room, just rawr! And I was like, what's going on, Bodhi? And he goes, he's fighting the bear.
The big black bear.
His roar did sound more like a bear than a Wookiee. I guess Wookiees have different voices just like humans, but
he did the Wookiee growl or roar when he got hit in the back by one of the Grimorian guards when they hit him with the thing, and he did that classic you do that.
I thought when he got use the old trapdoor used on him, I thought, oh, maybe he's going to be their Rancor now, threatened to have people go down there.
And then he comes out and kicks their butt.
Yeah, exactly. And another thought I had about this is I love showing a Wookiee as not necessarily a bad guy because he's a mercenary, but at least, you know, a lethal, ruthless opponent who's trying to kill you. Made it seem a little less maybe egregious that Boba Fett used to have like Wookiee pelt attached to his braids or whatever to his outfit, because you think Chewbacca usually, but now it's like, no, there's all kinds of Wookiees. Maybe it was a bad Wookiee that he killed.
A bad one.
Right, only the bad one. I did think it was sort of fun that he almost didn't go down the pit, like he grabbed his hand on and he was able to
and they're like, how do we deal with this, and she throws a blade at him
instead of just stomping on his hand or whatever, but you know.
blade's
fun. But also I almost kind of wanted to see Fennec a little bit more involved in the fight. Like, she wasn't even there most of the time.
What was she doing?
Yeah, they were showing the new characters.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But still, you're right. They need to do more with her.
They do. Yeah. She hasn't had a lot to do when you think about
it. The parkour was pretty awesome.
That was the only one thing in the first episode. Otherwise, she stands beside him on the throne. She goes with him to see the mayor. Has a line here and there, but you got to do something more with her.
She stands behind him and says the same thing every time. Are you sure you want to let them get off so easy?
Yeah, she keeps telling over him over to again. Like kick somebody's butt or shoot somebody or something.
Can you please be cooler?
And then he says no.
All right. Well, that sounded like a lot of complaining, but I still think the fight was pretty fun to watch.
I do too. Yeah. It was awesome. It was a charged moment with that big powerhouse just
throwing people around.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, Chris.
All right. So, I'll go on to mine. You guys hinted earlier at it, but let's talk about the car chase and the biker gang or whatever. Here's another situation where I thought it was pretty fun. I thought it was fun to watch. I mean, I'm up for a good car chase or speeder chase, whatever this was.
Scooter chase.
Vespa.
So one thing that was weird about it, I thought, though, is that it never felt very fast to me.
I agree. Yeah.
And speeders.
I kept thinking of O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. Speeders are supposed to be fast. Like when you look at speeder bikes going through Endor, those were fast. You know, like super dangerous weaving around those trees. In this case, it was admittedly a pretty cool big land speeder being chased by four Vespas or whatever, but it just didn't feel like it had the same speed. So I thought that was a bit annoying, and I thought maybe they were doing it because they're supposed to be going through busy streets and they just couldn't go as quickly. I don't know, but I wanted to feel the speed. But as you guys have implied, I think the big question here, and something I saw a lot of debate online over, is whether you feel like this was very quote-unquote Star Wars or not. Because you look at those speeders, and they're all shiny and classic,
colorful
and stuff
maybe
like that.
Maybe on Coruscant they wouldn't stick out so much, but I think they would even there. But on Tatooine, it just looked ridiculous to me.
Is that the problem, that they stood out from the rest of the environment, you think?
I mean, even on Coruscant, they would still seem kind of too colorful. It looked like something out of a Disney kid show to me.
It kind of felt like Spy Kids.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I chalked it up to, that it was Robert Rodriguez directed. And He was, you know, influenced by his Spy Kid adventures.
Yeah, but what about this? The idea that you know, George Lucas is all, you know, he made American Graffiti, which was this show about kids in
our
the
hometown.
50s.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there you go. And it's like the speeders kind of had a 50s classic motorcycle vibe to them, I thought. The Majordomo's land speeder reminded me of a big 50s boat of a car, kind of.
Yeah.
So this kind of feels like a George Lucas influence a little bit. And I didn't think it was nearly as bad as all the crap he put into the special editions, in my opinion. So I didn't hate it for that reason. But on the other side, I also kind of agree, it didn't feel very Tatooine or very Star Wars.
I mean, it reminded me of the pod race which was awesome in and of itself, but the announcers, hey everybody, get down, we're gonna do, and that's like, that's our world, it's not Tatooine,
right?
So it suddenly, like, one of the great things about Star Wars is it's so immersive, it really makes you feel like you're transported to another galaxy.
Yeah.
And then you see something like that and it's like, oh, I'm thinking of 80s fashion,
right? I I got Back to the Future vibes too. I mean, I kind of at the end it was almost wish that it had been like Bantha Poodoo or something that he crashed into.
That's so funny. I thought exactly the same thing. Biff Tannen's car going sideways into the manure truck, you know?
Right.
It's so funny. We've clearly all watched the same movies.
Yeah. I mean, and the CG even looked, I mean, it always, sometimes better than others, the underside of land speeders can look shimmery, but I felt like it really did here. And that in combination with being slow and the scooters taking me out of it, I didn't enjoy it at all. And I also felt bad for the people in Mos Espa, because this is kind of silly maybe, but they're all poor and just trying to make a living. And
he's like smashing all
their stuff, hitting
their
fruit carts and their little rickety things. And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to see this stuff get destroyed.
It's always fruit though.
Poor community struggling to survive. Well, yeah, but there was a water thing that
got. Yeah,
water's like a precious commodity.
And then the painting, I mean, I paused it. I don't know if you guys did, but I paused it. And yeah, Boba Fett is in there. It's like the classic drawing of Boba or of Jabba and all of his minions.
Yeah, Bib Fortuna and Boba Fett right there. That was sort of funny. I paused it and
Jabba.
Yeah.
Oh, Boba Fett was in it too.
Yeah. Boba Fett was in it too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was funny.
I didn't like it. Yeah. I really didn't like anything about it.
Well, I didn't mind it because I thought of all these sort of Lucas influences from what he used to do, but I do think it stands out in a weird, not so positive way, you know?
There were moments where, and I guess it was just a matter of perspective, where it did look like it was fast, you know, when they were zoomed in and they were close and you can see the buildings going by. But then when they would cut up to these long shots or, you know, these big shots where you could see all of them moving around, it looked like they were going 15 miles an hour or something. And I was like, what? Yeah. Wait, what? Wait, like, is it fast or is it slow?
Down. Come on, guys.
Right, right.
Get going a little bit. I do think, though, we got a couple of neat bits with the, I don't know, do we have a name for these teenagers, these kids that
the
he's
gang.
Hired?
The gang.
Street gang. Street gang. So a couple bits, like, where the one guy's, like, kicking the side of the car with the big spike in his foot and his robotic leg or whatever. And a couple of their, like, cybernetic enhancements I thought were sort of neat. I mean, I think we might see some more of that stuff.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that was a cool part.
Idea.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, you know, back in the day, the cyberpunk, you know, role-playing games where you could enhance yourself with all these modifications.
And better than the joke at the end, I thought, where keep your eye on it. He's like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
But he's like, I'm proud of my eye. I paid a lot of money.
Yeah, that's right. It's an expensive eye, man.
Like, yeah, screw
it's
you.
Like making fun of someone's nose ring or something.
I took my nose ring out years ago, so you guys can...
Is that right?
No, I never had one.
Oh, man. How's it going? All right. So my first thing is taking the edge off, which I give Michael Darwin, who wrote in, credit for that phrase. I think he wrote that in anyways, or the idea. But I'm struggling with the series a little. I'm still loving it. But I think in general, it's great to have a central character who's a hero and trying to create peaceful solutions among groups of people who don't get along. That's a honorable thing and kind of interesting to watch, but it's tricky because Boba Fett's considered one of the cooler Star Wars characters. And, you know, that's why being a cold, calculating mercenary, we thought he was cool that way. And, also, like, I worry about anything that's acquired by Disney becoming Disney-fied.
Yeah.
Which means basically neutering it or taking the edge off to make it less dark or threatening or whatever. And I think this episode kind of neutered some things from Star Wars and even undercut some things from previous episodes in the series and brought in some new things that seem kind of Disney-fied, mostly these kids and their scooters. Like, it is getting repetitive that Boba Fett keeps choosing a gentler path and Fennec Shand is like, are you sure you want to do that? In this episode, their robot 8D8, is that
8D8,
who it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, another vassal seeks an appointment. Shan's like, or seeks an audience. Or
an
whatever.
Audience.
Shan's
yeah.
like, do they have an appointment? And no. Fett's like, that's fine. Send them in. Like, anything that happens like this, don't worry about it. Or at the big feast that he has at his table. And she's like, you should enjoy the trappings of being head of the family. No, I can't. Or dealing with the mayor's assistant again at the end when they go to his office, right? And they're trying to get in. And it's like last time they just busted in, but here they're haggling with him and it feels repetitive. And Shan threatens his life and Boba Fett's like, wasn't that a bit much?
Yeah.
It's like, dude,
come on.
I expected her to go, dank ferret, I quit. And then even she at one point suggests, like after Kersantan attacks and Boba Fett says, everyone's watching to see how I'll respond. She's like, let's wait for them to show their hand. And I'm like, what? Do something. Don't
yeah,
wait.
Come on.
And I think her point is to say that they sent this Wookiee and now he's their prisoner. So that was their move. But still, it's like, I don't know. I'm a little sensitive to this kind of do nothing or do the nice thing attitude.
Right. And they released the Wookiee too, right? And he says it's either this or, and she doesn't she say or it's a bad
him.
Idea? So, it's either this or kill
yeah,
him.
Is this a good idea?
Yeah.
I mean, and, I don't. Want to, I mean, if he's going to come back and maybe be a bigger part of the show.
An ally or something.
Maybe, but I mean, kill him. Why not? You know, people get killed all the time.
Well, that whole scene, I think it's just one Gamorrean guard brings him out in shackles, and Boba Fett's like trying to haggle with these huts. Like, we'll give you this guy back if you promise to leave. And I'm like, if I was this Wookiee, I would just bat this guy out of the way and take off. Like, why is he just standing there?
Right.
You know, it just seems another little weak thing.
Boba Fett's like, no hard feelings, too.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Eric?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I mean, I feel like, you know, with him and the Tuskens and this new sense, or I mean, I don't know if it's new for him, but it definitely seems new for him that he's, you know, he's changing and he's building his tribe and he's, you know, he's getting all these people to come and work for him. I think that that explains it, but I still want to see him, you know,
with
charge into. You're right. I still want him to charge into that office and not take any crap. You know, shoot him and then
absolutely because
break the door down.
The fact that he has changed to be the kind of guy that wants to help the little guy, then you got to make up for that by having him be badass in any way you can. And they're not really doing that. They are. He is in some ways, but I'm not done. So this guy played by Steven Root, who I was glad to see, Lortha Peele, tells Boba Fett no one respects him, and I'm like, I want to respect him more too, just like you're saying, Eric. The street gang felt like, well, I kind of liked how last week Cammy and Fixer at Tashi Station had like 70s hairstyles, because that's what Luke had, you know, and maybe that's the Tatooine style, but for some reason these guys look too 80s to me. It just looked like it was from our world. Maybe because I grew up in the 80s, I don't know. and the brightly colored speeders looked out of place. I guess we already talked about that.
Yeah.
The fact that Kersantan knocked Fett across the room and squeezed him and bit his hand and nothing happened, that seemed like taking the edge off. The Hutts, they send this Wookiee to kill him, and then they immediately come and apologize. Sorry, we did that. Here's a present. We're leaving. I'm like, weren't you guys? I thought they were going to be the big danger of the series. And they're like, oh, sorry. Okay, we're leaving. Bye.
Later. It made no sense at all. Like, I wondered the same thing. Like, you send a dude to kill him and immediately show up and apologize and say they're out of here. Now, they had a reason for leaving, but.
Yeah, they did. But it just felt weird. Like, to introduce them as if it's like Jabba, this is going to be a big deal, and the next episode they're like, oh, there's somebody badder, we got to go.
And
Boba Fett didn't really do anything to make that happen, you know.
And it seemed like you know Kersantan was there, they captured him, and then the next day or even that day the Jabba shows up and you're like, how would they even know?
It seemed like maybe they needed to show
some time passed
there, but it didn't do, because I feel like the pacing wasn't great in this episode either.
Yeah.
The Rancor, I mean, I kind of like the idea of everything with the Rancor, but in combination with everything else I'm mentioning, you take this monster that's supposed to be terrifying, and now he's an emotionally complex creature that bonds with the human, and happens, Boba Fett happens to be the first one that he's ever seen. And I mean, I think Boba Fett identifies with the Rancor because they're seen as this terrifying creature that's meant to kill, but they want to be peaceful just like him. But it's like, what kind of story is that for Boba Fett? I just want to be a teddy bear. and they have freaking Danny Trejo, who's you think badass, and he does nothing.
Right.
he might not be done though. See, I didn't mind the Rancor stuff because number one, you guys remember, this was sort of set up in Jedi, right? Where the Rancor kills and the old guy cries, right? He's obviously connected.
I think that's where
Rancor.
They got the idea for all this.
100%. 100%, for sure. But also Danny Trejo, like, he's not just going to cameo in one episode, is he? I feel like he's...
He will.
You think so?
No, I'm saying you're right. He'll do something else.
I think so. And
he's got to.
I think there's something going on here, right? Like, he's playing Boba Fett somehow, or this is a ruse by the Hutts or something like that too. Like,
there was a moment. Yeah. There was a moment when he took off the blinders that I thought he was going to attack him or something.
Yeah, me too. I was waiting for that.
Jabba's, twins had ulterior motives with the gift.
And, you know,
but nope.
At the very least, if it all is above board and Rancors are good emotional creatures and Boba Fett learns how to ride it, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
that'll
sure.
That'll be cool. and that's why I opened up that part by saying all of this is cool, but in conjunction with all the other stuff I'm talking about taking the edge off, then it felt like, okay, here's another scene that used to be terrifying and is now nice and gentle. So I don't know. I if this part had happened and I didn't have that problem with the rest of it, I think I would have just been like, oh yeah, that's great.
So do you think in the future, I mean, I know I'm just kind of theorizing, but if, you know, they train this thing to be a killer, is Boba Fett gonna really feed anybody to it? Like, is he actually gonna use it as Jabba did?
No, I maybe not down there, but I think it's gonna play a bigger role.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
He's gonna ride him out, and they're gonna take
exactly
bad guys on.
What if he's like riding it around, and every once in a while it just eats a passersby, and he's like, no, Fido,
bad Rancor,
bad Rancor.
But that's all I had for that one. That was my main problem with the episode, is just feeling like it neutered everything a little bit, took the edge off the story.
Right.
Eric?
You know, we kind of talked about all the things. I liked seeing Danny Trejo and the Rancor stuff. I thought it was cool that he mentions the Witches of Dathomir. That was, they played a big part in the Clone Wars.
What's the deal with them? I have not watched Clone Wars, so I don't know much about them. How do you think they might fit in?
They're from the planet Dathomir, which is also the home planet of the Rancor.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the exact story. Maybe you can help me a little, Eric, but they're witches. They're right. Like sorceresses, and they're kind of creepy, and they were mostly human, but then for some reason they brought Darth Maul's race, the Zabrax, and bred them with human females to create these half breeds or hybrids.
Right. But they would perform this, like, you know, this spell or ritual or something that would make them bigger and stronger. They were
the male, you know, Zabrax.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That
their under horns, their control, right?
Right. Their horns would grow, that they would kind of grow in size, that they were, you know, like regular human size, but after their ceremony that they would get all big and buffed. I thought that it was cool that he mentioned the Witches of Dathomir, and if they show up somehow, that would be pretty interesting.
That'd be amazing.
I am curious. Well, my next one, I guess, is kind of a feeling I had while, even though I love more so the present time stuff than the Tusken Raiders stuff. I started thinking, we're three episodes in to this show now, and I still don't really feel like I have a great idea of what the situation is and what Boba Fett's role is in this community, for lack of a better word, right? Because he's the daimyo, but do we really know what that is? What does that mean exactly? He's referred to himself as a crime lord. Is he ruling over the rest of the crime lords, or is he protecting somebody? And if so, who is it? What kind of authority does he have over them? He's also been called the head of a family, but I don't feel like I really know what the family is. And maybe it's just me missing something, but I kind of want a little bit more clarity around that, and I feel like we're not really getting it, because what has he done so far? He's kind of gone to see the mayor. He goes to see what's her name in the bar, and he goes and deals with this group of kids and their speeders, and I'm like, is this what he's supposed to be doing? It feels kind of below his pay grade, right? To this little this disagreement between the water farmer and these kids who are being charged too much. I'm like, Jabba wasn't going and dealing with this kind of stuff. I don't think I feel like he had bigger fish to fry. And not only that, but like, Jabba had a lot of people around him. He had a whole thriving community and army, and Boba Fett's like in there by himself with Fennec and two Gamorreans, and that's it. So I'm just not sure of how it all works and what the dynamic is. And I want the show to clarify that a little bit. And I don't feel like we're getting it. And there's only seven episodes total, right? So
Yeah.
I don't feel like they're going to have a lot of time to take care of all these things. And I just want the information, you know, I want to feel like it's a rich world.
Right. You know, he comes into town and then just starts telling everyone, I'm the daimyo. And then they're supposed to say, oh, okay. But he hasn't really done anything.
Yeah. He killed Bib Fortuna. That's the right. reason why.
Right.
But he has no people.
Right.
Yeah. And
yeah.
But see, I understand how he got to the role. He killed the previous holder of the role, right? And that's how you do it in this world. But like, what is the daimyo? What exactly is he supposed to be doing? I don't know.
That leads into my number two, which is kind of like the lay of the land or the power structure in most ESPA and what's happening among the power players and all that. And daimyo were powerful. I'm looking on Wikipedia right now. Were powerful Japanese magnates, feudal lords who from a certain time period ruled most of Japan from their vast hereditary land holdings. So I think the idea, and I've kind of talked about this in previous episodes, is that out here in this part of the galaxy, there's no law because the New Republic just doesn't reach out that far.
Right. Yeah.
So it's chaotic. And so the crime lord / daimyo are how order is kept. And I think they're usually considered crime lords because they're corrupt and they will like protect anyone who pays them the most money and just crush anyone who doesn't pay tribute or do the right things, right? For their benefit.
Yeah. But
he wants to be a different kind of leader where he wants to
be a nice crime lord.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the whole reason why we're seeing this whole, flashback sequence with the Tusken Raiders is that was an experience where he got to know and respect a group of people and then saw them trampled and treated badly first and then trampled. And so he wants to try to create order. He even says to the biker gang, I'm going to create order here or something like that. Mm-hmm. He wants to try to create a system that's mutually beneficial, which is why when the water dealer guy jacks up the prices and then goes to him thinking he can test the boundary of this new guy and say, hey, these guys are stealing my water, do something about it. He realizes, no, you treated them unfairly. So here, I'll pay you like, what is it? 1/3 the price you were asking or even less.
Yeah.
Now shut up and lower your prices, and gives these other guys a job, which is, he needs to build up his organization. So I think that was sort of the point of that. That was actually showing him doing the kind of thing that he's trying to do,
even though
it was on a kind of a small scale. It was an illustration of everybody's going to have an arrangement that maybe not won't be the best that you wanted for yourself, but it's something everybody can live with.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
I get that. I think there's a little bit of a disconnect. I mean, maybe we're supposed to assume that there's all these systems in place already in a way. And like when the leader changes, everything else kind of keeps running a little bit, you know, like when you elect a new politician, there's the rest of the government still functioning in theory, right? You just have a new leader in place.
But when you have a country that's really unstable and the leader is killed or whatever, then there's a power vacuum and people are going to try to increase their position. And that's what happened here. Well, I don't know if exactly what happened, but when the robot or the droid, is giving him the rundown, he says Bib Fortuna didn't have the power of Jabba, so he relied on uneasy alliances. He said Mos Espa was divided amongst three families: Transdotians rule the city center, Aqualish, the workers' district, Clatoonians, Starport, and Upper Sprawl. So it sounds like he had, and he was paying the mayor to keep it all together. It sounds like he had less power and maybe it would have fallen apart at any moment, you know, Bib Fortuna.
Maybe. But if
you got to figure out a way to rule with power. Jabba ruled with fear.
Right.
Right.
Fett wants to rule by respect.
Sure.
Respect.
Yeah. But I mean, if people aren't respecting Boba Fett at this point, like, is it all falling apart around him? And who does he have to help him keep it together? Right. Like, as we were saying, it just feels like there's nobody.
That's why he's putting the gang together. That's
why he hired these guys. And he needs more. He hired the Gamorreans. He hired these guys, but he needs more.
Yeah. I just can't help but think there must be larger groups amongst the population that are sort of are on his side already and are kind of running things behind the scenes in a way, in the way they always have, right? I just feel like I want to see more of that because
he's
like,
got to have people directly under his employ, like enforcers, but also build those alliances so there's mutual respect between like him and this Garza or whatever.
Yeah. I'd almost want to watch a show just of that, of him managing the city and building things out.
I thought this episode was a lot like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he was doing with this, with Steven Root.
It's true.
North Appeal. He was figuring out how to show. I mean, this, maybe it was a small scale thing, but it's also a way for him to show what he's all about,
what he can do.
He did put his foot down there. He's all, here, take this meager amount and cut your damn prices. I respected that, you know?
Yeah. And I guess that's representative of what is going on all the time and what's happening around him everywhere, I suppose.
Well, I mean, I think he needs to, but he does need, it's a cumulative thing, you know, that takes time. So he needs more situations like that where he can show that he knows what he's doing, but also he needs to bring more people into his organization, make more alliances and all that kind of stuff, I guess.
For sure.
Yes. I was going to say that whole 8D8, you know, presentation, shouldn't that have been like day one?
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is what's going on. I mean, how long did that go on?
I just think that was probably more of a storytelling thing where they wanted to get us immersed into the story before they spring all this on us, because it was my least favorite episode. But I think if it had been the first episode, I would have been like, what? Like,
what the hell?
And the last thing about sort of the lay of the land and the power players is, the Hutts decide to leave because they found out the mayor promised this territory to the Pikes. And that's, by the way, the ones who are running the train. If you know, it's also the one that he went to at the beginning of this episode or in the flashback. And they were not wanting to pay the motorcycle gang and Boba Fett, the Tusken Raiders. So he went back to the Raiders and found out the motorcycle gang presumably had killed them because they left their symbol. But before we could find out what happened next with that, the Wookiee ripped him out of his back to tank. But anyway, here we see that they're, the Pikes are coming to claim the territory, and maybe they actually killed the Raiders and just put that symbol there. I wonder, to frame them.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, Fennec Shand says these are just the first wave. They're going to war. So my first thought was, okay, maybe the Pikes are going to be the big bad of the series. But part of me is like, next week they're going to be like, sorry, and leave. Right.
I feel like they need you know, a Darth Vader type presence, you know, before Kerosene left, I thought he was going to be, you know, he was going to be that one force with, you know, alongside the twins. But now that they're gone, is it just going to be this like faceless organization, or is there going to be a guy who's, you know, is going to be the face of it?
That'd be cool. Maybe it'll be Han Solo.
Right. Just keep bringing back old past characters. Yeah, my last one, and sorry to jump over you, Eric, but it was sort of how I was on a grander scale. I feel like the show has done a little bit better of a job of laying things out a bit, and that's where the flashback to the Tuskens works for me and plays into it a little bit better, because as you said, we see him go meet the Pikes and they have stuff going on back then. Now at the end of this episode, they show up. So I'm thinking the Pikes are going to be kind of the biggest group of antagonists here against Boba Fett, and that's what he's going to have to deal with as the show plays out, which I think they've done a better job of setting up anyways, you know. But I
like the Pikes because they just look so creepy to me, and they could be a good enemy. But I also understand, Eric, what you're saying, that maybe we need more of a character, like,
right? Yeah, like, no, I love,
like,
their
personality.
You know, yeah. Right, I love their armor. I think they look cool and intimidating, and you know, it's interesting that they're these fish type creatures, and they're in the desert. I think that's all cool, but I want them as well as, you know, some you know, some badass villain that is controlling them somehow.
Maybe it's Darth Vader.
Maybe.
Like the gang, apparently I looked up, they're called the Kintan Striders. That's what this gang is that killed the Tuskens and stuff. I didn't get that from the episode, but would it be enough if they're kind of the bad guys representing the Pikes in a way, rather than just one person? It's this gang that he has to go up against. I wonder. I don't know. I think it might work.
We want an arch villain, right?
You do.
Right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
I'd like to see that. Yeah.
Again, I like the speeder bike guys too. I mean, it was definitely fun seeing him, you know, go into Tosche Station and kick all their butts. I mean, I thought that was cool. But I guess we just wait and see.
All right, fine. It's going to be Darth Vader.
What's your last one, Eric? Or are you, what number are you on?
We're on three, but we've pretty much covered everything. Three. I mean, it was. I did want to mention one thing about the, you know, about the dream sequence, and maybe I missed it, so I'll throw this question out. Did we see the body of that, you know, the one badass Tuscan? I was looking, and they showed the leader guy, and they showed a bunch of you know, other guys, but they didn't show her, or if she was a her. The one that trained him.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering if maybe, because again, before they were decimated, I was, you know, surmising that they would somehow come back and help him, you know, in his endeavor. But if they're all dead, obviously not. But I was wondering if maybe, since we didn't see her body, that she may have survived.
You know, it's a good question. I wouldn't be surprised, now that you mention it, if one of them or a couple survived and they show up to help him out.
And if any of them would, it would, you know, I would have thought it would be
the toughest one.
Be her, right?
They didn't show the kid, did they? Dead Tuscan child?
I didn't see any.
They showed the stick little stick it was playing with. So I'm assuming that it was in the fire.
Yeah.
I bet you that was representative. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. They showed the leader. So we got to assume most of them, if not all, are dead. You know, the other thing about that scene too, is I thought the soundtrack, the music was amazing in that part.
Yeah.
When he's leaving, actually first on the Bantha before they're all slaughtered, it was this really, really incredible score, kind of heroic sounding, almost really positive and uplifting. And then when he comes back, it's this choral funeral type thing. And obviously that works with the tone, very moving, but amazing. I thought I loved the music in that part.
And then I think the very next scene was with the Wookiee, right? And that music was great too.
Yeah.
That fight. It was much different, but whoa.
Yeah.
Music.
Whoever's doing the music on this, and we should probably know that, but
I think it's the same guy. I don't really remember his name.
No.
Is it Ludwig Göransson or something?
Oh,
like that?
Yes, I think you're right. Something like that, anyways. Doing a bang up job in any case.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, let's get into some lore, Star Wars lore, and callbacks. Fennec Shand said Dank Ferrick in this episode.
Yep.
Which we heard a few times in The Mandalorian. I think it means God damn it.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Sorry if that offended anyone. As I said last week, I think Echuta means F you. And also in this episode, Boba Fett tells Kersant and don't work for Skug Holes.
Skug Holes.
Stay away from the Skug Holes.
So if someone ever says to you, Dank Ferrick, Echuta, Skug Hole, then you can figure out what that means.
He did. When he was talking to a speeder bike girl at the end, he said dank at the end of his sentence. And I was like, how would it be used in that phrase or in that instance?
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to remember what he said. When I first saw that Boba Fett was in the Bacta tank still after all this time, I thought, wow, Luke only needed to be in there once as far as we knew. That's weird. But then I was just thinking, wait a minute, Darth Vader seems to use it pretty regularly. But then again, Vader's wounds are really bad, so I don't know. But just the fact that Vader seems to bathe in that thing.
Yeah.
regularly, maybe.
And then he was going to throw one of the Grimorian guards in there too. I mean,
that's
right. One of those things that they can never really be harmed. They just throw them in the back to tank and they'll be okay.
Secure all.
Man, I need one of those. The Kintan Striders. So this is who the Pike representative said had told Boba Fett the Kintan Striders already collected their protection money. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I was confused because the motorcycle gang, the speeder bike gang race is Nikto. I knew that. And Fett says, you don't have to pay the speeder bike gang. So I knew he was talking about them. So I look up Kintan Striders and they're creatures from the planet Kintan, but their only appearances in Star Wars has been as one of the pieces in the holographic chess game.
Oh, really? Oh.
When R2-D2 plays Chewbacca, R2-D2's guy lifts up a Kintan Strider and smashes him down. And then Chewbacca goes, And Solo's like, you better let the Wookiee win. But I figured it out. The Nikto, who are the biker gang, they come from the same planet. And so I think it's kind of like when a biker gang calls himself Thunderbirds or something.
Right.
Oh, okay. We're the Striders.
The Striders.
Cool, cool name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And their symbol, the two lines, is in the language called Outer Rim Basic, which I think is also Huttese, but I'm not sure, is a K. Those two lines is the same thing as a K, like Kintan, I guess.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yeah. Nice.
When Boba Fett goes back and finds the Tusken Raiders burned and dead, that was a lot like Luke coming home to find Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen gone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? And then burned them like
in
Vader.
A pyre.
Right.
Yeah, just like Vader. Yeah, like Luke burned Vader in a pyre. Another formative moment for Luke. This little spider robot with the like red globe underneath it.
Oh, the brain thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
I didn't know anything about that. I had to look it up. It's called a Bomar Monk.
Bomar Monk.
You could see those in Return of the Jedi in Jabba's palace. But the Bomar Order, which consisted of Bomar monks, was a religious order that believed in isolating themselves from all physical sensation to enhance the power of their minds. To that aim, enlightened monks had their brains transplanted into the nutrient-filled jars. Whenever they wanted to move, these bottled brains used spider-like droid walkers. And Jabba's palace was originally a Bomar monastery that he invaded and took over. So there's like this huge story about this little,
oh my gosh,
this little thing. And as far as you know, they're still there, right? I mean, they were there when Jabba was there. Did they just ignore him and just let these monks walk
Maybe
around?
They didn't care.
They didn't probably care either, right?
Right. So wild.
And then we saw the same gag from Return of the Jedi of this like creature getting another smaller thing with its tongue and then burping. There was another mention that Tatooine used to be covered in water, which what became non-canonical, I mentioned this before, but Tatooine was enslaved by the Rakatan and then people rebelled and Rakatan bombarded the planet. They keep mentioning that, so it makes me wonder if it's going to be a plot point. At first, I was wondering, does that mean that the Tusken Raiders are actually like fish people underneath those masks? But I don't think so, mostly because the Pike are fish people. So would they have
both? You wouldn't want them to be very similar.
It just doesn't seem like they would do that, but who knows? I read, and I did not see this, but that we see a brief glimpse of Pelimoto with her pit droids.
Oh, yeah. That was in the when he first showed up to Tatooine and you see the spikes with the stormtrooper helmets. She's way far in the back.
Right.
But yeah, it was her.
I wonder if they used old footage or had Amy Sedaris come back in just to be a background player.
I'm not even sure it was Amy Sedaris, to be honest. So far in the background, it could have been anybody with the right hair. I recognize the droids more than anything, to be honest. Yeah.
And we see those stormtrooper helmets on pikes, just like in The Mandalorian. On Boba Fett's feast table, I think we've seen some of those creatures before. I didn't look all of them up, but we also saw a bottle of Spotchka, which is the blue drink that came up a couple times in Mandalorian. Boba Fett said of the Rancor, I've ridden beast 10 times its size. And some people think that's a callback to the Star Wars holiday special where he was riding a big giant dinosaur creature.
That's exactly what I thought. I remember that. That was exactly what I thought. I mean, the only redeeming quality of that thing.
Right. There's also stories of the like ancient Mandalorian riding the Mythosaur, which I think they've even mentioned in, maybe that was a Mythosaur that we saw in the holiday special. I don't know. Boba Fett tells Danny Trejo to feed a full Ronto carcass to his new Rancor. The Ronto is one of the creatures George Lucas added to the special edition that went right in front of the camera and had like Jawas the hanging
Jawas off
of it.
Jawas falling off of it.
Okay.
I thought the street gang being part machine is sort of a running theme in Star Wars, but interesting because they chose it, whereas like Luke and Vader had because of had injuries. When their speeder won't start, or not their speeder, I think the mayor's assistant, it made the same sound when the Millennium Falcon won't start. Like
the car that was.
And, well, I feel like I should mention this again just because it seems to be more central to the story. The Pikes are the primary distributors of spice in the galaxy. Spice is like the Star Wars narcotic. It's important. It's come up in Star Wars since the very beginning. The reason Jabba had a bounty on Han Solo's head was because he was hauling spice for Jabba and had to dump it to avoid trouble with the Empire. So owed Jabba the money for it and couldn't pay him back. And also in Star Wars, C-3PO says to R2-D2, they're heading in this direction. What are we going to do? We'll be sent to the spice mines of Kessel or smashed into who knows what. That's all I got. I had a few notes, but what do you guys have? Do you have any other random notes or anything, Chris?
Just a couple this week. And this could probably fall into your myth and lore section, but we did see a C-3PO-like protocol droid waddling across, not waddling, maybe waddling, but crossing the street shuffling. He had paint on his face, though, which made him look a little bit different. So
I think he was vocalizing, too.
Yeah, he said something, and I wondered if it was, you know, Anthony Daniels. I think that he has been involved in almost every, you know, every Star Wars movie at some point.
Even the ones that don't have C-3PO?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. I know he's been in a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, C-3PO, whenever the C-3PO, it's him.
I was wondering if maybe that was him.
When you think about that, that's pretty insane that the same guy has played C-3PO for 40 years in the actual like costume. So
but I doubt it was him because when they have protocol droids that aren't C-3PO, they usually have different voices, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was a stretch, but it made me think.
One other thing, when Boba Fett shows up on a Bantha, to talk to the Pike guy, he ties the Bantha to a wooden post like a horse with a rope, and I just thought that was funny for some reason. I'm like, if that Bantha wanted to get away, I don't think it would have any trouble with that little stump. Must be well trained. And then the feast scene, I just thought they eat pretty well. There was a lot of food on that table and the droids were just bringing more.
That's what she was doing while Kersantan was fighting them. She was making that meal.
They have droids for that.
Yeah, who made that?
Yeah, exactly.
It was a little R2 or an R5 unit bringing it out or something like that. So
R5, Chef R5.
We know that they're good at delivering drinks. We saw R2 do that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's it. Everything else on my notes we kind of covered in the main section.
I have one about how the 8D8G droid mentioned the sail barge disaster, that it wasn't. I felt like maybe they didn't know that it was Luke and the rebels that actually destroyed it, or that it was just some mishap,
malfunction,
right? And that Jabba is actually dead and was killed by Princess Leia and all that. I wonder if people really know that, or if it's
fake news.
Just exactly.
Yeah, it's a good question to call it a disaster. I mean, it's a disaster either way, but I guess what information got out? Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Anything else?
I think I'm covered.
Okay, I just had a few short ones. I don't know if anybody cares, but I guess I thought it was kind of interesting that we found out Boba Fett's sleeping chamber with his back to tank was just right up the stairway from the main chamber, because when they're when the Gamorrean guard and the Wookiee kind of roll down the stairs and then they're in the main chamber there.
Yeah, it's a good point. I've never felt like I really had a handle on the geography of the right. place. So
we've only seen that one main room.
Right, yep. right. It's just right there. I liked when 8D8 called Fennec Shand Mistress Shand. Has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, it's good.
I love seeing Steven Root in anything.
He's great. Great
in News Radio and Office Space.
Yeah, Stapler. That's my very big Stapler.
Yeah, that's fine. And Sophie Thatcher was the main street gang girl. I've been totally obsessed with this show, Yellow Jackets, on Showtime, which we cover on this podcast. So maybe you've heard us talk about it if you're listening to me. But anyway, she's one of the main characters on there. She plays a young, young version. Yeah, Juliet Lewis is the older version of her. But she's great.
Rising star if she's on Mandalorian or Boba Fett and Yellow Jackets.
Two pretty awesome shows.
Hitting it big. All right, cool. I mean, even when I don't love an episode, I still have fun talking about it. So hope you guys enjoyed. We'll take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time for a little bit of news about the Book of Boba Fett, and I got a couple items this week. The first is that apparently, guys, the audience demand for the Book of Boba Fett is tracking behind The Mandalorian, so it's apparently not as quite in demand. A company called Parrot Analytics, which analyzes audience engagement and interest and overall popularity of a TV show, put out this report, and they said that during the first 11 days of availability on Disney Plus, demand for The Mandalorian was 75.5% higher than Boba Fett in the US. Oh. And globally, demand for the former was 101% higher than the latter. Now, The Book of Boba Fett has been the 12th most in-demand show in the US and number 18 in the world. That all being said, it is still within the top 0.2% of all shows right now. So it's not like it's in any trouble or anything like that, but it's not quite as popular.
Falling behind.
It doesn't have Baby Yoda. That's what I chalk it up
to. 100%. I was going to ask you guys for theories on why Mando was so high, but you already hit it.
Yep.
Yes, Baby Yoda played a huge part in that. So that's that. But anyways, Boba Fett's still doing pretty well, and it's not like it's going anywhere.
Cool.
Also, Nerf. I believe when we were covering The Mandalorian, we talked about the fact that Nerf puts out these really fancy replica Star Wars toys or prop replicas in a way. They are putting out one of Boba Fett's blaster now. It is very, very cool looking. It's Nerf Limited, LMTD. That's cool. Like Hasbro's line of collectible type stuff. So this thing is 30 inches long. It includes 12 darts. According to the website, it has an electronic scope and has an illuminated lens. And when you pull the trigger, of course, it makes the same sounds as the blaster in the show, which is fun. Nice. You can pre-order this thing right now for $109, but it's not releasing until 03/01/2023. And I think that means March 1st, 2023, because America, you guys do month, first. Day for a year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rest of the world does it the other way around, but I figured it out. So next March, which is over a year away, which seems like a long time, but if you want to pre-order, you can, and presumably you'll get it. You can find it on the HasbroPulse.com website, along with lots of other cool Star Wars stuff. Actually, the Hasbro's put out a bunch of neat Star Wars stuff, including Mando's blaster, as I mentioned. So
nice.
Check that out if you want. I mean, it's the kind of thing I'd kind of like to have, but if I bought it now, I'd forget all about it And then,
yeah, I know, after a year.
After a year, but then
I got to really pick and choose with that stuff. Otherwise, yeah, I'm going to have a house full of it. But I do get things every once in a while. In fact, one of my favorites is this.
Yeah.
Saber.
That is awesome. I've been to your house and you showed me your lightsabers.
I know. We show it off.
It's cool. It's like, hey, come on in. Do you want to see my lightsaber?
I know. Exactly. Oh, boy.
That's fine. I have plenty of stuff around me as well. So that's it. But
yeah, you showed me your Lego. So
that's, yeah, that's right. One of the best Lego sets I have, one of my favorite builds of all time, is the UCS Slave One. So it's, awesome. Related. It's nice. Awesome. And that's it for the news. Quick this week.
Cool. You know, it really does make more sense, Eric, to do the day and then the month and then the year, because the day is shorter than month, right, is longer than year.
Yeah,
and the year, exactly.
Smallest to biggest.
But we're never going to change.
No,
America,
USA, US. I know.
All right, let's get into listener feedback, Eric.
Okay, let's see. We have Sherry Morford. First off, I wanted to let y'all know that your podcast last week did give me more appreciation of that episode, so thank you.
Awesome.
Now, as for this episode, what a fun ride. So many callbacks to the movies and even The Mandalorian, with the stormtrooper heads on pikes, and we even see in the background the woman who repaired the Mandalorian ship. Boba Fett got his own Rancor, and I never thought I would consider a Rancor cute and sweet. This show is really turning a lot of our first impressions of the movies around. Rancors are sweet, and Tuskens are family. I love the addition of Danny Trejo as the Rancor's trainer and the young biker gang, which includes the actress from Yellow Jackets. Can't wait to see more. Also, I really hope that Wookiee gets bored and decides to come back to join Boba Fett and his growing gang / family. Can't wait to hear what y'all have to say about this one. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd like to see him again. I feel like maybe we won't, but he's a freaking cool character.
We better. I want to. I mean, I want more of him for sure.
We'll get to the end of this, and then there'll be a post-credit scene, and they'll announce the Chrysanthemum spin-off show.
The spin-off next show. Year. There you go.
And Mandalorian will be back in 2027.
Yes, Mandalorian someday.
No. <That's right. laughs>
All right. Barry Evitz writes, another great episode. I hate seeing how things turned out for the Tuskens. I hope that Boba gets his revenge, and I love seeing Danny Trejo, Steven Root, and the baby Rancor. Fingers crossed that letting Chrysanthemum go free doesn't come back to bite Boba again. Yeah.
Des Combe says, love this episode, but I don't know how I feel about the cyborg youths on flying Vespas.
Yep, flying Vespas. Yeah, we had our problems. Let's see. Alicia Stout, a pod race on Vespa with no wheels. That's cool. Greatest part of this episode was Machete and Steven Root, but you boys will probably love the episode since I didn't. Lol. I have spoken.
Alicia has spoken. All right. Bianx Vargas writes, as Robert Rodriguez is involved in the series, I knew it was just a matter of time before DT would grace our screens.
Janet Seidel says, loved it, exciting and fun, and Danny Trejo to boot. We're trying not to overthink it. My kids and I all enjoyed it.
Tina Carrari. So the Hutt twins kind of gave Boba Fett two gifts, a Rancor and Danny Trejo. Also, I love all the talk of the witches of Dathomir and riding gentle Rancors. I really liked the courtship of Princess Leia book, so this made me very happy. So happy I'm willing to overlook the underwhelming car chase, although I love seeing Sophie Thatcher from Yellow Jackets.
Boy, everybody loves the Danny Trejo, eh?
Yeah, he's the Machete.
Yeah, right? I totally get it. All right, Brian White. 50% cheesiest thing I've seen in Star Wars. 50%, oh, that was awesome. That chase scene definitely felt like Spy Kids. I'm really hoping the Crimson Dawn is going to be part of this. Maybe tie up some loose ends from Solo. Boba also better be riding a Rancor before this show is over. Boba with a missile launcher and flamethrower on the back of a Rancor. Is that too much to ask?
It's happening.
Totally. Yeah.
Michael Darwin says, I liked elements of the episode, especially the appearance by Steven Root and Danny Trejo, but overall it didn't click with me. The action felt lackluster, and while I get little homages or nice toss in, did they have to use every single street chase cliche in one scene? Plus, that's about the least threatening street gang I think I've ever seen. Who thought Christmas ornament scooters would be an imposing sight? Biggest complaint, though, is that they're taking the edge off of everything that has been badass before. The Rancor is a misunderstood puppy. Tusken Raiders are a peaceful indigenous tribe. And Boba Fett has lost his trigger finger. Seriously, he needs to take a page from Mal Reynolds and kick a hut into a jet engine.
Yes,
I'd pay to see
I
that.
Read this and I was like, yeah, that really prompted me to do my whole point on that because I felt the same. But I'm glad that most of you guys really liked it, and I hope I didn't turn you off on it because I would feel bad about that.
I see. Darren Fitzpatrick says, watched it with my 12-year-old son, and he definitely enjoyed it more than me. Way too much Disney for me. What The Mandalorian did well was to find the balance between the older viewer and the younger ones. This episode was clearly aimed at everyone who enjoys a pod race. Hopefully just a one-off, but I have a horrible feeling it's now on a rocky road that it will find difficult to navigate. Then again, I am 47 and maybe I just need to enjoy it for what it is.
And finally, Dave Mason writes, I'm 44 and watched it with my 11-year-old. And I always love it more than he does. Not that he doesn't love it, just that I love it much, that much. Ha. Huh. A bad Star Wars show episode is still better than any other show out there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, fair enough.
Thanks, guys. And we have one call this week from the ever-trusty Steve Brown.
Oh, House Podcastica, this is Steve, and this is going to be for Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 3. So we still don't know who sent the assassins. What a great line. Then you will work for me. I kind of like these transition scenes with the little animal burping. So who runs Mos Eisley if Jabba and now Boba run Mos Espa? Who runs Mos Eisley? Okay, right, this is a flashback. So this is Mos Eisley, and this is in the past. Dang, is this his village? Did that other group that he just said he was going to wipe out come and wipe out his village? His tribe? His Tusken tribe? Oh my god. Oh damn, the big Wookiee is back, and he's ready to fight. Dang, young Natalie with the blade jumping in there. Dang, and the Wookiee using his teeth. The Wookiee's name, Chrysanthemum Mumbai. That looks like Danny Trejo. It is Danny Trejo. So Boba wants to ride the Rancor. Nice. Hey, a protocol droid right in the middle of the street. Keep an eye on him. Sorry, it's an expression. Oh, another one directed by Robert Rodriguez, written by Jon Favreau. Kind of a short one, but hey, really good. I guess these Pikeys, right? Is anybody Snatch reference there? That's the big bad. Okay. Can't wait to hear you guys break this one down and tell me what I missed because I just watched it once.
He seemed to dig it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Pikes sent the assassins or the mayor on their behalf, but I guess we don't really know for sure, right?
It's kind of the same thing, right? The mayor's working for the Pikes. I think they did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mos Eisley, I thought I read somewhere that it's just too small and it's peaceful, but I don't know.
I mean, they showed it in I think Mandalorian, right? And they went in the cantina and there was nobody there. Yeah. So,
and
people are just leaving.
He mentioned Favreau wrote it. Favreau wrote every episode of this show, except I think one where he co-wrote it with Dave Filoni, number 7 or number 6 or something.
So he did them all until the end. Okay.
I think so.
All right.
Nice.
All right, that is our show. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thanks, guys, as usual. If you guys want to write in or record a message and send it to us, which we love, you can email us at talk@podcastica.com.
Or you can check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at podcastica.
And please check out our other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. Check out Chris over at TalkingDeadPodcast.com.
Thanks.
What are you guys doing lately?
Not a lot. we put out an episode on Christmas, and we have plans for something coming up, but we might not get to it till the end of January, so it's going to be a long break for us, but here I am instead.
Do you know, have you announced what it is, or do you not want to say?
Yeah, no, we're going to watch a couple of Pollyanna McIntosh movies and talk about them, because we liked her so much on World Beyond. Yep.
The Women of Podcastica episode of Walking Deadcast is recording this Saturday. They're doing a Ask Me Anything, so if you go to our Facebook page, you can ask them embarrassing questions and they have to answer.
Sounds fun.
And then we may get to interview a Walking Dead cast member at the end of this month, but since I don't have it quite nailed down yet, I don't want to say who, but possibly look forward to that.
That sounds fun. Cool.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Watch out for scug holes.